This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, May 28th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, Colorado Senate passed a bill Thursday proponents say is one of the most important pieces of police accountability legislation in the country. In a backlash to 2020's historic voter turnout, lawmakers in many states have introduced a raft of bills that will make it harder to vote. Colorado is not one of them. More on that story ahead. And we bring you the latest edition of Trends Diary. At 8:30 this morning, Connections comes your way. Co-hosts Joel Edelstein and Jem Banks will be taking calls. Then at 9:30, it's the Morning Sound Alternative, when you can get your weekend started off right with music until noon today. But first, we'll start with the headlines. The American Civil Liberties Union of Colorado has taken action to get vaccinations for those in custody of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The ACLU sent a letter to the Secretary of Homeland Security demanding that vaccine access be made available to the 563 people in detention at the Aurora ICE Processing Center. They are making a similar demand for the more than 15,000 people in ICE custody nationwide. The ACLU said over the course of the pandemic, ICE detention facilities have been some of the worst hotspots for the spread of COVID-19, with positivity rates 5 times greater than prisons and 20 times greater than the general U.S. population. Front Range environmentalists are celebrating after the Environmental Protection Agency reversed an earlier decision signaling they want tighter regulations on oil and gas wells in Weld County. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Last year, a D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals decision sent Northern Weld County status back to the EPA because the agency didn't appear to be accounting for the ozone-creating potential of oil and gas operations across the entire county. The decision also centered on an apparent geographic mistake by the EPA, which had said the Cheyenne Ridge Formation on the border of Wyoming helped keep Northern County pollutants out of the metro area. Environmental groups had to point out that the ridge is actually farther north. The EPA reversal will now place Northern Weld County and potentially thousands of oil and gas wells in the area inside the Northern Front Range non-attainment zone for ozone standards. The current line for the non-attainment area stops at about Wellington, north of Fort Collins. The EPA must designate geographic areas as meeting, attainment, or not meeting, non-attainment, the National Ambient Air Quality Standards, NAAQS. The EPA decision also reverses the recommendation of the Colorado Air Quality Control Commission, which urged the EPA to exclude Northern Weld from tougher rules in 2016. The U.S. Court of Appeals called the exclusion arbitrary. The EPA said it is sending the reversal back to Colorado officials and giving them 120 days to add to their arguments. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The number of Americans seeking unemployment benefits dropped last week to a new pandemic low. As the economy opens up, Thursday's report from the Labor Department showed that applications declined 38,000 from 444,000 a week earlier. The number of weekly applications for jobless aid, a rough measure of the pace of layoffs, has fallen by more than half since January. While the unemployment rate remains above 6%, many businesses nonetheless complain they can't find enough applicants for open jobs. The Front Range is getting a new area code next spring. In early 2022, the prefix 983 will join 303 and the more recent 720 area codes, according to the Colorado Public Utilities Commission, which says the existing codes are projected to run out of available phone numbers by the fourth quarter of 2022. The new 983 area code is expected to last 25 years. The original 303 number was established as Colorado's area code in 1947. The 303, 720, 983 area codes will cover central Colorado, mainly Denver, Arapaho, Jefferson, Adams, Boulder, and Douglas counties, along with some land just outside Metro Denver. Long known as Settlers Park, the area below the Red Rocks Formation in West Boulder is soon to be known as the People's Crossing. The city of Boulder announced the new name yesterday, developed by representatives from federally recognized American Indian tribes. The name honors the area as a crossroads for indigenous peoples who first traversed and lived in the mountains and plains of the Boulder area. The people, or our people, are English translations for how many American Indian tribal nations refer to themselves in their native languages. In the announcement, the city said the tribal representatives' recommendation to rename Settlers advances the city's racial equity plan goals and helps the city fulfill its Indigenous Peoples' Day resolution to correct omissions of the Native American presence in public places, resources, and cultural programming. Meanwhile, University of Colorado Boulder announced Thursday it will invest $25 million over the next 5 years into diversity initiatives. That will include programs to recruit, retain, and support students, faculty, and staff from underrepresented communities. A CU press release said the chancellor and other campus leaders will work with students, faculty, and staff to define exactly what those programs will look like. In partnership with Governor Jared Polis's Vaccine for All plan, Boulder is offering free walk-up vaccine clinics in downtown Boulder tomorrow through Thursday, June 3rd, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 1300 Canyon Boulevard. The clinics are free and no insurance or IDs are required. While anyone is welcome, city staff and nonprofit partners are working to make the clinic accessible and welcoming for unsheltered homeless community members and for downtown area workers. The vaccine provided will be the one-time Johnson & Johnson. Beginning this Saturday, the city of Boulder will again run the free park-to-park shuttle service to Chautauqua Park from two satellite free parking lots, as well as downtown Boulder. The shuttle helps reduce vehicular and parking impacts on neighbors to Chautauqua and the area's natural and cultural resources. Free park-to-park shuttle service will be offered from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Please remember to bring your face covering, which will be required. The public is invited to virtually attend the 22nd Veterans Memorial Day tribute tomorrow at 10 a.m., Military groups, veterans, Gold Star families, and community members from across Colorado will honor the service and sacrifice of fallen military personnel from wars past and present over Memorial Day weekend. It can be watched on YouTube. On a lighter note, this Friday before Memorial Day, Quinnipiac University typically conducts polls on political issues, but with all the news about UFOs making headlines in recent days, they decided this week to poll folks about UFOs and their interest in space travel. Next month, intelligence agencies are expected to deliver a report to Congress about unidentified aerial phenomenon, or UFOs. Asked what they think about unexplained sightings by military aircraft, 42% of Americans say they think they're man-made aircraft, 35% believe they're aircraft from another world, and 22% did not offer an opinion. Tim Malloy with Quinnipiac University says keeping track of trends is a full-time job.
What's remarkable about that is Republicans and Democrats come down pretty much equally. A third of Democrats believe we are not alone necessarily, and a third of Republicans believe that, and a third of Democrats and a third of Republicans would like to travel to space. So it's one of the few times in this divided country where everybody gets along on an issue. The majority of Americans doesn't buy it, but one third is a big number.
Malloy says a majority of those polled said if the moon and Mars were colonized in their lifetime, they would not want to travel there. The Front Range forecast for Memorial Day weekend. Nearly 80 degrees today under sunny skies with a low tonight of 53. But cloudy skies and rain moves in tomorrow with a high of 68 and 58 degrees forecast for Sunday and Monday. Right now outside our Boulder studios, it's 49 degrees. Colorado Senate passed a bill Thursday proponents say is one of the most important pieces of police accountability legislation in the nation. SB 273 seeks to limit what is an arrestable offense in Colorado to felonies, violent crimes, and victims' rights offenses. Bill sponsor Senator Pete Lee says one of the goals is to reduce the number of people accused of nonviolent crimes taken to jail.
Over one half of custodial arrests and pretrial detention for low-level crimes of poverty has become the default option for law enforcement even when they don't involve threats to safety. But they escalate into violence and killings by law enforcement. Think Michael Marshall, think Marvin Booker, for whom this bill is a tribute and honor. The legislative declaration cites our jail population growing by 800%, mostly pretrial innocent detainees in local jails. This disproportionately is directed at black men, and pretrial detention destabilizes communities. It doesn't make them safer. It destabilizes.
Senator John Cook, a Republican from Greeley and a former sheriff of Weld County, said he debated with himself whether to make a statement in opposition ahead of the floor vote.
I decided, well, I'm going to come down because victims matter to me. This bill doesn't care about victims. It only cares about criminals. The other reason I decided I'd probably come down was because I care about public safety. I care about our communities. And this bill doesn't make our communities safer. It makes it more dangerous in our communities because we allow criminals to roam in those communities, repeat offenders, with very little justice for the victims.
Cook's comments were consistent with opposition arguments against the bill throughout the legislative process. Sponsor Pete Lee withdrew an earlier version of the bill in order to address repeat concerns. Compromises made in SB 273 were still enough to maintain the support of organizations and community groups that have been calling for stronger police accountability mechanisms. Senator Lee, a Democrat from Colorado Springs, says the opposition from former and current police was to be expected, given the challenge the bill poses to the status quo.
I can assure that this bill will never, ever be supported by the police, either the chiefs or the FOP, because they want to keep the status quo, and we are telling them, you have to do things differently. Do not think arrest, subdue, incarcerate for sleeping on a park bench, driving without an updated registration, or trespassing. The police will resist change, but it is our obligation as legislators to set limits on police's absolute discretion to arrest. And this bill does so modestly by focusing on nonviolent misdemeanors and municipal offenses. Officers retain absolute unfettered discretion to arrest for serious crimes.
Lee says the bill is a harm reduction measure that will help to prevent deadly encounters or excessive use of force by explicitly limiting the police response to low-level offenses to ticket writing. SB 273 passed out of the Senate and onto the House along a largely party-line vote, with only one Democrat, Senator Joanne Gentle of Fort Collins, voting against. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Since Donald Trump lost his bid for re-election last November, Republican-led state legislatures have passed dozens of laws to restrict voting and control how elections will be run in the future. Colorado has followed the road less traveled, approving legislation that will dramatically expand translation services and ballot access for the state's eligible voters. KGNU's Roz Brown has more.
Everyone who has voted in Colorado knows that our ballots, particularly the ballot initiatives, can be really difficult to read and understand.
That's Amanda Gonzalez, Executive Director of Colorado Common Cause.
There is a requirement under the Voting Rights Act, so the National Voting Rights Act, that requires certain jurisdictions to translate their election materials. In Colorado, that's currently only four counties that need to translate those election materials.
Those four Colorado counties include Conejos, Castilla, Denver, and Sawatch.
So if you live in one of those counties now, you receive your ballot in multiple languages. If you vote in Denver, it's got the translation on your ballot. But if you live in one of the other 60 counties throughout the state, that's not the case. Your ballot only arrives in English. And in most cases, you can't even find a sample ballot online that has been translated. Now, in 2020, we did see a handful of counties voluntarily do a sample ballot because they recognized that for many eligible voters, the ballot was really incomprehensible. And so what they did is they created those sample ballots and made them available in 2020. And so what this bill did, and hopefully when it becomes law, when the governor signs it, is for counties that have a minimum number of eligible voters who don't speak English very well, and it's at least 2,000 voters or 2.5% of eligible voters, they will now need to create translated sample ballots that will be available online. So if you're at home and you've got your ballot and you're like, oh gosh, I need some help reading this. You can go online and pull down a sample ballot. Alternatively, you'll be able to go into a voter service and polling center and get a translated ballot. And that way you can actually just vote that ballot that's in the correct language for you. And then finally, it creates a hotline so that even if you live outside of one of the counties that will, you know, the expanded counties that will now be covered under this bill, or you need assistance in a language that isn't covered by your county, you'll still have a resource where you can call this toll-free number and get assistance in other languages.
According to Gonzalez, 18 additional counties in Colorado will be required to translate election materials in 2024. She notes it was a bipartisan majority of lawmakers in both chambers of the Colorado legislature who approved the bill after learning there were approximately 82,000 eligible Colorado voters who were not proficient in English and were effectively denied access to the 2020 ballot.
You know, there was that survey that came out in 2018 that said you needed essentially a college education in order to feel comfortable reading Colorado ballots. And so that means that for a number of voters who even speak, you know, some English or conversational English or enough English to do well at work, that doesn't necessarily mean that you feel comfortable reading your ballot in English. And so I think that in a state that has such complicated ballot measures, it's particularly important that we provide resources to voters so that they can feel confident knowing what they're voting on and how they want to cast their vote.
Gonzalez believes translation will be particularly helpful for ballot initiatives, which even English speakers struggle to understand.
Those really are some of the most important policies that determine the day-to-day lives of our families, our communities, our state. And it's so exciting that we are finally expanding translation services so that all eligible voters can understand those impacts and have their voices heard.
In a year when many states are working to suppress the vote and disenfranchise voters, Gonzalez says Colorado's efforts to expand translation services and ballot access is encouraging.
Right. If you are eligible to vote, you should be able to vote and have your ballot accurately counted. And I think that this will go a long way in ensuring that every eligible Coloradan who wants to vote and wants to have a say in deciding which people and policies determine their futures should get that opportunity. And so it's really exciting to see Colorado lawmakers take the lead here in a time when we're seeing lots of states trying to restrict access to the ballot or restrict voting rights. Here, you know, we're seeing lawmakers make the decision to ensure that all of their constituents who are eligible to vote are actually able to do that.
The bill was championed by a Black, Indigenous, and People of Color coalition that included 31 community nonprofit and advocacy groups. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. The focus for now is on our shared need to connect and solve problems, despite the increased isolation we're all experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation Boulder County.
Dear Trends Diary, my name is Carolyn Kirchhoff. I'm the creator of Boulder COVID Stories, a storytelling and print publishing project about how people in Boulder have experienced the pandemic. I moved to Boulder from Switzerland, where I'd been living for 7 years, in March 2020, right before the coronavirus pandemic started in the U.S. Stuck at home during the pandemic, I craved a connection to the town around me, and I felt like if I could just talk to people, I could figure out where I was. So in the summer of 2020, I set up the office for the first time in North Boulder Park. It was just two chairs placed 6 feet apart and a sign that said, "The Boulder COVID Stories office is open." All sorts of people stopped to talk. Since then, I've been conducting interviews in parks and other public spaces throughout Boulder. The people I interviewed include high school students, PhD candidates at CU, food deliverers, sorority sisters, executives, local authors, athletes, older adults, unhoused people, parents, grandparents, people who were getting divorced, people who lived alone, people who lived in a commune, and people who lived in long-term care. The Boulder COVID Stories office offered something that was missing during the pandemic, a place to talk with a stranger about life. It also offered me insight into the diversity of pandemic experiences in Boulder. This year-long interview project will culminate in a collection of creative nonfiction about how people experienced the pandemic to be published this winter. These personal essays reflect on the broad range of experiences people in Boulder have had over the past year and a half. They also reflect on Boulder as a specific place with a local history that shapes how we live here. To learn more about the project, visit the website bouldercovidstories.org. There you can also find information about participating in the crowdfunding campaign, through which you can order an advanced copy of the Boulder COVID Stories print publication. You can also follow Boulder COVID Stories on Instagram. Last summer, I met Heather Schulte at an in-person stitching session at the Museum of Boulder. And on June 10th at the Museum of Boulder, Heather and I will be hosting a panel discussion about how local artists have been building community during the pandemic. Now she'll tell you a little bit about her project, Stitching the Situation.
I'm Heather Schulte. I'm an artist here in Boulder, and in 2020, I started a project called Stitching the Situation, which is a community stitching project in response to COVID-19 in the United States. I started stitching in March of 2020 after I realized that the numbers were just climbing and climbing. And so I started stitching the data by coding the cases in blue thread and the deaths in red. So each case has one blue stitch and each death has one red stitch. It became very clear to me quickly that I was not going to be able to stitch all of these cases myself, not even all of the deaths at this point. And so I reached out to my neighbors and invited them to stitch with me. And at that point, I was getting overwhelmed with trying to keep the project going. And so I started making kits. And those I started sending to friends and family across the country, and then received a couple of grants, one from the Boulder Arts Commission and then one from the Fiber Art Network. And those helped fund material and shipping costs, which are now supporting over 150 people across the country in more than 35 states. This project is expanding into different types of workshops, one of which will be through the Boulder Public Library this summer, and part of it will be up at the Denver Art Museum this fall. Stitching the Situation is open to anyone to participate. You can sign up to Stitch a Block via my website, www.stitchingthesituation.com. You can also contact me through the website if you're an organization who's looking to get involved or to host a workshop at your space. On June 10th at the Museum of Boulder, Carolyn and I will be hosting a panel discussion about how local artists have been building community during the pandemic. The director of the T2 Dance Company, Erin Toonbridge, will also be taking part in the panel discussion, which will be moderated by the local writer and musician, Jennifer Davis Flynn. Carolyn will also be reading drafts of the upcoming Boulder COVID Stories print publication. You can register for the event on Eventbrite via the Museum of Boulder's website. Hope to see you there.
Feeling inspired? Do you have your own story of making connections or solving problems during this time of physical isolation? Then visit www.commfound.org. Look for Trends Diary and share your experience with Community Foundation Boulder County. Your submission could wind up on these KGNU airwaves.
You have been listening to the Friday Morning Magazine on 88.5 KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Thanks for joining us here on today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young.